I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Rabbi Sam Rudin, retired National Interreligious Affairs Director of the American Jewish Committee, and author of Pillar of Fire, a biography of Stephen S. Wise. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom, l'shana tova, tika tevu v'techa, temu gmar chatima tova. A good, healthy, new Jewish year, and may you be written and sealed in the Book of Life for 5777 and well beyond. I trust your Rosh Hashanah, your Jewish New Year, was filled with family and friends, outstanding services, and brought meaning and beauty to the first days of the 5777 year. I hope also your new year was in stark contrast to the morass of the presidential election campaign and the vice presidential debate. They are of such dreary dishonesty and negativity that it makes it far more beneficial to focus on the depth and meaning Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur provide in our lives. This Jewish season is a time of exaltation. That's why they call these the High Holy Days, but there's also a certain sense of pressure. We're in the midst of the 10 days of repentance now, the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, when we Jews try to right the wrongs we've done in the past year and reconcile with anyone we've injured or offended. It's a challenge to try to heal our actions from the past 12 months, and it is perhaps a greater challenge to try to change the habits we've fallen into that lead us to do things we are not proud of. Our goal during these days of awe is to look honestly at ourselves and ask God to forgive us those failings we have committed in the last year, and so to become whole in the new one. But, as the Talmud tells us, for sins against God, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, atones, but for sins against other human beings, the Day of Atonement does not atone, until we have made atonement to them personally. God cannot heal the breaches in our relationships, only we can do that, by going to the people we've wronged and asking them to forgive us. So this is the most important time of the year for us morally, a crucial period of reflection, self-examination, what Israelis call cheshbon ha-nefesh, taking an accounting of our souls. On Yom Kippur, the fast day of atonement, the holiest day of the whole Jewish year, begins at sundown, Tuesday. We commit ourselves to trying to repair our own world through repentance, prayer, and charity. Tshuva, tefila, u'tzedakah. The melody that captures the essence of Yom Kippur best is also the only melody people come to temple just to hear, the Kol Nidre, the renunciation of failed vows that begins the night of Yom Kippur. It's the melody that for many people captures the heart of the Jewish experience with just a few minutes of music. Here's the great cantor Moshe Oysher's rendition of the beginning of the Kol Nidre.
Oh,
That was the remarkable Moshe Osher's Kol Nidre for Yom Kippur, coming up Tuesday night. Kol Nidre is designed to bring us close to what is holiest within us. At this time of atonement and return, we do well to remember as well that holiness begins for Jews with personal action, mitzvot, not simply words or professions of faith. The way to improve the world is by doing acts of goodness, blessing, and courage, not by talking about them, not even with God. That's what we dedicate ourselves to this week, actions that matter and improve the world. Nonetheless, we do need to ask God for help, and that is never more clear than in the Kol Nidre's soaring conclusion. Here's cantor and opera star Jan Pierce singing the end of the Kol Nidre. We could do a whole show on the Kol Nidre, its many interpretations, including some unfortunate musical ones. I think we'll play them next Sunday. We could tell famous stories about Kol Nidre Eve, jokes about Kol Nidre, and so on. But the truth is, the only way to truly appreciate Kol Nidre is to hear it live, in synagogue, this Tuesday night, the eve of Yom Kippur, in a room filled with fervent prayer, soaring music, white clothing, and prayer shawls, and the power of the great Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur. It's a truly amazing experience, and it takes place just one night a year, this coming Tuesday night at a synagogue near you. Why don't you come to mine? And all of it is there to bring us to tshuva, repentance, to help us learn how to work to heal injustice and brokenness. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish, Rabbi James Rudin, worked for a long time to heal injustice. He was the director of the National Interreligious Affairs for the American Jewish Committee. He's also the author of Pillar of Fire, a biography of Stephen S. Wise, who is very likely the most underrated great Jewish leader of the 20th century. Find out much more from Rabbi Rudin and about Rabbi Wise when we return in a moment here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life, 322-7035.
It's everything you wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's Taste of Judaism program is now in its 17th year and explores Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community. This free introductory class taught by our rabbis is immensely popular throughout Southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, Taste of Judaism brings to life Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. It'll help you rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism.
Classes are free and open to all and include Jewish snacks. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year at Splendido as well. The whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class, starting soon. It's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email Mila, M-I-L-A, at tetucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish Rabbi James Rudin. He's the author of The Pillar of Fire, a biography of Stephen S. Wise, but of many other books, a noted American rabbi who was extremely prominent in interreligious affairs, the director of the interreligious affairs for the American Jewish Committee for many years. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Happy to be on your program. My pleasure.
Tell me what prompted you to write a biography of the renowned but kind of underappreciated Rabbi Stephen S. Wise.
Well, I entered, Rabbi Sam, I entered the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, which was the merged school of the Reform Seminary. And the New York School was founded by Rabbi Wise in 1922. I didn't enter it in 1922, but I did enter it in the mid-1950s, shortly after Dr. Wise, as he was called, had died, and all of the faculty members had been appointed by him, and his, if I can say it in Hebrew, Ruach Marachefet, the spirit hovered, his spirit hovered over the building. But that was when I was a student. However, the real reason I wrote it was that I, just like you, I thought he was underappreciated, a great, the most prominent American Jewish leader of the first half of the 20th century, and he also created for rabbis and every other clergy, including Christian clergy, freedom of the pulpit, active involvement of religion in politics, and a sense of human rights, civil rights, economic rights, and, which he was very unique in his time, he died in 1949, at age 75, Rabbi Wise was, almost from his birth, first a pre-Theodor Herzl Zionist, and then a Zionist all the way to his death, when most Reform rabbis were not. And he called Zionism, before the State of Israel in 1948, the lodestar of his life. That's really what kept him going and made many enemies and many friends in the Jewish world.
You know, in the interest of full disclosure, I should note that my grandmother, A. Irma Kohan, before that, A. Irma Reinhardt, was a confirmation student of Rabbi Wise when he was the assistant rabbi in Portland in 1905. So we have family connection there.
Well, let me just correct you. Rabbi Wise was nobody's assistant. He was not that kind of rabbi. He was the senior rabbi.
Oh, he was the senior rabbi. All right.
In Portland, you're exactly right. In between 1900 and 1906.
Then I absolutely stand corrected. We will talk much more about Rabbi Stephen S. Wise and with Rabbi James Rudin when we come back in just a few moments here on Two Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey, Rabbi.
Morning.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes. They want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier. You can smell things. You can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
We have four stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, twojewishradio18@gmail, or visit our website, twojewishradio.com, T-O-O, Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows through our website by streaming them, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We now have a little more than 4 weeks until we finally elect a new president of these United States. We continue our 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. In the Jewish endorsements phase of the presidential campaign, Michael Chertoff, Homeland Security Secretary under President George W. Bush, has endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. The endorsement of the Democratic nominee is notable because while other Republicans, including many who have not been in government for decades, have endorsed Clinton, Chertoff was a senior cabinet member in Bush's second term, and he is known for his tough posture on terrorism. Clinton has good judgment and a strategic vision how to deal with the threats that faces, Chertoff said. Donald Trump, Chertoff said, has misplaced loyalties, accusing the Republican nominee of making enemies of your friends and cozying up to your adversaries, citing Trump's proposal to distance the U.S. from NATO and his admiration for Russian President Vladimir Putin. Chertoff, the son of a rabbi, was a lead investigator in the Whitewater investigations of Hillary Clinton and her husband, President Bill Clinton, in the 1990s. People can go back decades and criticize some of the judgments that were made, Chertoff said, referring to the 1990s antagonism between the Clintons and congressional Republicans. That is very, very insignificant compared to the fundamental issue of how to protect the country. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Gemar Chatima Tova, an easy fast on Yom Kippur coming up.
And to you.
We began talking last week about refugees and kind of renewing the question of refugees from Syria, from Africa, from a variety of countries, the huge refugee crisis that exists in the world today, and the Jewish imperative to consider the stranger, to take care of the stranger, to open your home and allow them to have a place. Complicated question, always difficult, but still important.
Well, at the same time, it's a complicated question, but it's also a very simple question. You know, the Torah commands us, and a whole series of laws command us to be kind to the stranger within our midst, because we were strangers in the land of Egypt, and to take care of all the disadvantaged people, women, orphans, children, the poor, the hungry, et cetera, et cetera. No ifs, ands, or buts. No only if they're Jewish or only if they're Judeo-Christian. So really, it should be a simple question for us. I mean, there's the line in the Seder where we open the front door and say, Halach ma'anya, let he who is hungry enter and eat.
Right?
It doesn't, there's no tests of political allegiance or religious purity or ideological correctness. Or
Skin color, nothing.
So the question is, everybody knows why there's such a refugee crisis today. There's so many civil wars and so many evil regimes that seem bent on doing harm to civilians and terrorist groups, that a lot of countries have become untenable situations for a lot of people. And for most of these people, the sort of shelter or land of asylum, a first resort to which they can take a boat or even walk, is Western Europe, and specifically the European Union. Although for some, it's Israel. I mean, you can walk to Israel from South Sudan or Eritrea or, you know, all kinds of...
And they do, and it's a significant challenge in Israel. Right.
It's, I mean, and there's a certain irony in the fact that a Jewish state where most policies are controlled by the rabbinate should have difficulty responding to such a clear-cut issue in terms of Jewish law. That's a whole irony in and of itself. worthy of a separate discussion.
It is. And I'm not sure the rabbinate controls immigration policy, but a fascinating
problem. It controls far too much.
No argument there. So in dealing with this question of immigration from a Jewish perspective, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, I preached about it a year ago on the High Holy Days. And of course, that changed the whole world's policies, you know, since Rabbi Kohan preached about it on the Bima. But when you think about it, from a Jewish perspective, there's no ambiguity. I think you're right. It's our responsibility to help those people who are dispossessed.
Right. And in general, whatever sense in which they're dispossessed, whether they're poor or they're orphaned or they're homeless or they're forced to leave their homeland, whatever it is,
physically limited,
it's our responsibility to care for them and to make them feel welcome and safe. And that's a sort of prime directive that we often forget. But I think it's also deeply rooted in the American tradition, and the American response to this refugee crisis is something we should probably discuss next week.
Thanks, Tom. We will talk then. An easy fest.
You too.
We welcome to Two Jewish one of our Shin Shinim, the special representatives of Israel, who are here in Tucson, Arizona, on behalf of the Weintraub Israel Center. Leah, wait, let's see if I get it right. Gene Avuno.
Yeah,
that's
even the
better.
Israelis can say it, so
well,
that's okay.
But it's pathetic when the rabbi can't pronounce your name. I'll keep working on it.
It's okay.
Welcome, and L'Shana Tova.
Thank you. Shana Tova.
Leah, what's it like for you coming from Kiryat Malachi and suddenly being in Tucson, Arizona, just graduated high school, and here you are? What does it feel like?
Actually, just when we graduated, I didn't even have the time to, like, you know, to stop and think about what I do. But I was just...
Sometimes that's better.
Yeah. I just got on a plane and I came to Tucson. It's Tucson. I love the view of Tucson and the heat. I really love it. And it's just crazy. I'm here for 3 weeks already, but I'm still learning things and I'm still, you know, trying to adjust as much as possible.
I think you'll be learning things the whole year.
Yep.
So this is a fascinating program. We talked with your partner, Bar, last week about the Shin Shinim program. It's Shnat Sherut, a year of service, yep, to the State of Israel. But instead of doing it in Israel in an underprivileged community or people that are in need of assistance in other ways, you're doing it abroad, explaining about Israel to American kids. What don't American kids know about Israel? What's your first impression?
What they don't know about Israel?
Yeah, what do we not teach our kids about
Actually,
Israel?
I was very surprised because they know a lot about Israel, but not as how I see things as an Israeli teenager. They see it through television, like through, I don't know, but not through people. And that's why we're here. And, you know, we have the schedule that I'm working on, all the different congregation. And that's really important. Oshlat puts a lot of effort in that.
She's hardworking.
Yeah, she is. But actually, like the break, like the lunch and stuff, that there I'm talking with the kids and I'm sitting with them and they ask me questions about me living really close to the Gaza Strip and how it is to go to school in Israel and how, like, the daily stuff. Those topics, those moments that I'm talking to people, even in the JCC cafe, I met a woman and she was 80 and she was a Holocaust survivor. And I just found myself talking to her. And she told me her story and I told her my story, my Aliyah story. And it's just those moments are the moment that changed everything. And I'm myself learning things about Israel that I didn't know from people that don't live in Israel. So that's really interesting.
Very interesting. You worked with kids a lot in Kiryat Malachi. How do the American kids compare to Israeli kids?
Okay, so first of all, I'm the oldest sister in my family, and I have 6 young brothers and sisters, and
only
all of
six.
Them.
So you're one of 7 children.
Yeah, and actually one is on the way, 2 months.
So you'll have another sibling who'll be born while you're here.
Yeah, uh-huh. But I get to choose the name, so that's okay that I'll not be in the Brit Milah.
I think Sam is a great name, Samuel. I just want to...
I'll think about that.
Okay. Maybe not for a girl.
Yeah.
But.
It's a boy, though.
Okay.
So I see the differences in my home and in here. And I think I see the differences more when it comes to teenagers. Because in Israel, you know, when you're 18, you've graduated from school and you have to go to the army. And then the big trip to South America. And everything is different. That when here you start college when you're 17 even or 18. So that's like... our lifetime, our how do you say that? Life.
Well, our life experience is really different.
Yeah, it's really, really different. And I think that the Israeli kids are more like a little bit more serious sometimes because they have to deal with things that in America, thank God, you don't have to deal with. But you have your own problems, you know? So that's very fun to see the differences and like to see my friends and hear friends. And it's like different humor and everything. But with all of this, I see so many similarities, and you are not different as you think you are from us, and we are not different as we think from you. So that's
it's a great lesson. Thanks, Leah, and Gmar Chatima Tova.
Gmar Chatima Tova. Toda Rabbi.
Very welcome, and we'll talk soon. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, headmaster of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John. Gmar Chatima Tova.
Gmar Chatima Tova. Thank you.
We are between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is coming up fast, the Day of Atonement, fast day. You guys aren't in school that day. How do you go about this process of encouraging atonement?
Sure. So, you know, the high holidays are a very special time in a Jewish day school setting. And it's actually to our advantage that it comes towards the beginning of the year, because we're all in the headspace of this moment of atonement, if you will, but also that soul searching and that introspection and self-reflection of how to be a better person and how to make good choices and to be healthy and making a contribution to society, all those kinds of things. So we teach the mechanical pieces, you know, here's what we do. Here's how we do these rituals. This is when, you know, candles are lit. This is when the meal is served before the candles are lit so that your fast begins. This is when you're in services. And these are some of the things that you do during services. So there's a lot of the mechanical components that are part of the learning.
Do you teach sort of, you know, this is what Kol Nidre is and means?
Absolutely. Yeah. And with those kind of mechanical pieces, often, especially in the older grades, comes the depth of what's behind them. Here's what we do, and let's talk about why. And let's explore, is that meaningful to you? How does that relate to, you know, a 13 or 14-year-old in the year 2016, which, let's face it, is very different from the days when Moshe Rabbeinu was leading us around in the desert. And then what is that like for a child that's five?
You mean when Moses was leading in the desert, people didn't all have iPhones?
I think they had iTablets of some kind. I'm not quite sure.
So in view of the... By the way, I was thinking about the interactive quality and the... Mm-hmm. The whole fact that everyone of any younger age seems to be constantly interacting with their peers through their palm.
Yeah.
That's different. How does that affect how they interact on something like Yom Kippur, where they're supposed to be in services all day and not using their phones?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a hard one because I think there's such a pull to want to always be connecting and always be part of the conversation and kind of on the edge of what's trending, what's current, what's now. Fortunately, developmentally, that doesn't really kick in until seventh grade-ish. Mm-hmm. So the younger kids are pretty oblivious in terms of the social media impact on life. They're into other digital kinds of things.
Mostly video games.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, Pokemon Go.
Right. So we want to encourage them to be present in the moment. And so we do like an annual Mount Lemmon retreat. No cell phones are allowed. And so you sort of take a vacation from that part of life. And when that happens, it promotes the other things that might not be happening when you're real obsessed about the next text message.
Well, I hope it's a good day without devices. And
I'm looking forward to it.
At Tzom Kol, easy fast. Gmar Chatima Tova.
You as well. Thank you, Rabbi.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, first one of this new year. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Benny's dog dies, and he goes to see his Chabad rabbi. "Rabbi, I wonder, could you find the time to say a special blessing at my dog's grave?" The rabbi replies, "I'm sorry, Benny, it's not possible. In Jewish law, the rules don't apply to animals." Benny says, "But I'm really upset, Rabbi. I love this dog." "Well," says the Chabad rabbi, "maybe you should go to see the Reform rabbi across the road." So Benny walks away dejectedly, but he turns back to the rabbi and says, "That's a shame. I was going to donate $10,000 for such a service." At which point, the Chabad rabbi shouts, "Come back, come back." Benny turns around and says, I thought you couldn't help me." "Ah," says the rabbi, "you didn't tell me your dog was Orthodox." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read a great portion on Yom Kippur. It explores holiness and commitment to God on Wednesday. In the Reform tradition, in the morning, we'll read from the Torah portion of Nitzavim, affirming that we have the responsibility in this great season of high holy days to choose blessing and God. In the afternoon, we chant from Kiddushim, the holiness code, teaching us how to be holy through living sacred and moral lives. But next Shabbat, we'll chant the next-to-last portion of the whole Torah reading cycle, Ha'azinu, the penultimate section on the final book of the Torah, Deuteronomy. Ha'azinu is Moses' last poetic words to the people of Israel before he dies. It's an elaborate instruction, charge, and prediction of the future for the Israelites. Ha'azinu is a final look inside the thoughts of the greatest leader our people has ever known, and a fascinating snapshot of what was predicted for the future of the 12 tribes once they arrived in the land of Israel. Ha'azinu is a long poem, and the powerful poetry includes a description of God's word dropping like a gentle rain on tender grass, a vision of the Lord's justice and faith as complete and flawless. It describes God's love for Israel, bringing forth honey from the rock to nourish and favor our people. In language rich and complex, but also challenging, Moses promises that God brings reward to those who preserve justice, but punishes those who fail to keep faith with God. In one memorable phrase that has made its way into the prayer book, Moses says, "Ki shem Adonai ekra havo godel Eloheinu," "I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribing greatness to our God." Accordingly, our role is to both praise God and create justice in this world. Both are important. Both support each other. We praise God and acknowledge that justice comes from the one source of morality. And then we work to assure that justice for all is central to our moral life. We must strive not only to be good, but to create goodness in our world. May you be sealed in the book of life for a year of goodness, a Gemara Chatima Tova, and an easy fast on Yom Kippur. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi James Rudin, will explain what Rabbi Stephen Wise meant to the Zionist movement in America and around the world, and why even this titanic figure had his challenges. Find out what they were and why they still matter when we return right here on Too Jewish in a moment.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, THAAZ.org, 529-3888.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli police question billionaire, art collector, philanthropist, and president of the World Jewish Congress, Ronald Lauder, in connection with a fraud investigation into Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. The questioning took place while Lauder was in Israel for the funeral of Shimon Peres last week. Lauder was called by the Special Investigations Unit of the Israeli police to give testimony about Benjamin Netanyahu and his wife Sarah. Following Peres's funeral, Lauder and the Netanyahus are close friends. Lauder has hosted the Netanyahus on several occasions. He said he would cooperate, since the current inquiry process is in its preliminary stages and not a full criminal investigation yet. The Israeli police could not travel outside of Israel to question Lauder. They waited for him to enter the country so they could, well, talk to him. Netanyahu has repeatedly denied any wrongdoing. In July, Ari Harrow, a California-born former chief of staff for Netanyahu, was held under house arrest in Israel for a week in connection with this investigation. Harrow had been detained for questioning at Ben-Gurion Airport and was questioned for 14 hours about suspected financial violations by Netanyahu. We will stay tuned. Despite major efforts invested by the Israeli government to encourage French immigration to Israel, the number of Jews moving to Israel from France this year is expected to drop by 40%, according to a brand new report. This sharp downturn has been attributed to the failure of the Israeli government to effectively integrate French immigrants from Europe's largest Jewish community into Israeli society. In its 2016 annual assessment, the Jewish People Policy Institute, a Jerusalem-based think tank, blames the slowdown on the lack of adequate jobs for French Jews in Israel. French Jews considering Aliyah fear a fate similar to that endured by some of their relatives, the report says. They will find it difficult to work in their chosen fields or earn at the level to which they become accustomed. For these reasons, some French Jews are delaying Aliyah or even moving to countries other than Israel. The drop in immigration from France follows 3 years of unprecedented growth. A series of terror attacks in France, several of them targeting Jews, coupled with a sharp economic downturn, were the catalyst for the French Aliyah boom. In each of the last 2 years, more than 7,000 Jews made Aliyah, relocated from France to Israel, making France the top provider in the world of immigrants. Based on numbers for the first 8 months of this year, the new report estimates that only 5,000 will arrive in Israel by the end of 2016. Nonetheless, according to recent surveys, an estimated 200,000 French Jews, 40% of the whole community, have expressed interest in immigrating to Israel. Simin tavu mazel tov yehelanu yehelanu yehe Simin tavu mazel tov yehelanu lanu. In Haifa, Israel, the world's oldest man, 113-year-old Yisrael Kristal, a Holocaust survivor, celebrated his bar mitzvah only a century late. Kristal celebrated his belated bar mitzvah over the weekend with his children, grandchildren, and nearly 30 great-grandchildren. He is recognized as the world's oldest man. Kristal missed his bar mitzvah at age 13 due to World War I. At the time, his father was in the Russian army and his mother had died when he was just 10. His daughter, Shulamit Cooperstock, says that Kristal was very pleased when he said the Shehecheyanu, the prayer of gratitude, as a tallis was draped around his shoulders while he was surrounded by his family. Everyone sang and danced around him. He was very happy, she said. It was always his dream to have a bar mitzvah. He really appreciated the moment. Cooperstock said her father is still in good health, remembers his life in the early 20th century, including seeing a car for the first time at age 9. Born September 15, 1903, in the town of Zarno, Poland, Krystal moved to Lodz in 1920 to work in his family's candy business. He continued operating the business after the Nazis forced the city's Jews into the ghetto, where Krystal's two children died. In 1944, he was deported to Auschwitz with his wife. She was killed. In 1950, he moved to Haifa with a second wife and their son, working again as a confectioner. When asked at the time he was certified as the oldest living man back in March what his secret was to long life, Krystal said, "I don't know. I believe that everything is determined from above, and we shall never know the reasons why. There have been smarter, stronger, and better-looking men than me who are no longer alive. All that's left for us to do is keep on working as hard as we can and rebuild what is lost." And now, finally, Krystal has had his bar mitzvah just 100 years late. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish Rabbi James Rudin. He is the author of the biography of Stephen S. Wise, Pillar of Fire. He is also the author of a number of other books and many articles. He was the interreligious affairs director for the American Jewish Committee for a very long time and has had an incredible role in interreligious dialogue, not only in America, but throughout the world. In talking about the Zionism of Stephen S. Wise, it was controversial. Can you explore a little bit about how he came to that Zionist identity and how that played out in the Reform Movement over the course of his career?
Of course, we know that Theodor Herzl called the first Zionist Congress in 1897 in Switzerland, Basel. But a few years before that, Stephen Wise was the seventh generation of rabbis in his family. His father, Rabbi Aaron Wise, was, after they came from Hungary, from Budapest, and Wise was 17 months old when he came to the United States as a little boy, as an infant almost. His father was the rabbi of the very famous Rode Shalom Synagogue in New York on the Upper West Side now. And they were committed to, they didn't call it Zionism in his youth, but the Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. However, in 1898, and this is the key to everything in Stephen Wise's life, he was a reporter and a delegate to the second Zionist Congress, also in Basel, in 1898, and there's where he met Theodor Herzl, who was also born in Budapest, and only 14 years older than Stephen Wise, but who became really a magnetic, charismatic, either older brother or father figure to Stephen, and he never changed. He was touched by Herzl in 1898, and he really was what we can now call a political Zionist. He really didn't care as much about the rebirth of the Hebrew language, which he loved, or the various political parties in the Zionist movement, which he was interested in and was certainly involved, or the kibbutz movement, which meant a lot to him, the collective movement. What he really wanted, and he used the phrase Zion before Zionism, and maybe I'll explain it to your listeners, there must be a Jewish commonwealth or a Jewish state before you worry about the Hebrew language or all the other music or philanthropy or literature or architecture. Get a state first for the Jews based on kind of a biblical prophecy and biblical covenant, and then you worry about the movement and whether it's labor or right wing, left wing. And he never changed. He was what we would now call a political Herzlian Zionist all his life, and that really ran the roughshod over a lot of the major thinking of the Reform, not only the Reform Jewish world, but other parts of the Jewish community as well. Because they said, well, we're really Americans, and Palestine, as it was called then, it's dreamers, it's a fool's errand to think about a Jewish state or a Jewish commonwealth. And then there were other Jews who said, no, it's socialism, or it's communism, or it's labor or whatever it is. He never deviated, and most Reform rabbis, given the benefit of the doubt, were at least up until the coming of Hitler in 1933, non-Zionist. But he never deviated, and that's what made him remarkable. He always believed in a Jewish commonwealth. The other point, and I'll rush it along a little bit, he was a fantastic orator. He was compared to William Jennings Bryan and then later Winston Churchill for his oratorical skills. Remember, this was before television, and he did use radio toward the end of his career, but he was an incredible speaker, very tall, very handsome, very charismatic, and he held weekly services. They weren't Sabbath services. They were services on Sunday morning,
right.
At Carnegie Hall, and he would attract between 2,500 and 3,000 people every week in New York City.
Amazing. There are controversies associated with Wise.
Many.
And I'm thinking in particular of the ones building up to the Holocaust. And he was sometimes accused of having ignored the early information about the Holocaust, seeing it as propaganda. Can you address that a little bit?
Well, you hit on it, Rabbi. That is the heart of my book, and that is the heart of his career and, in many ways, the tragedy of Rabbi Stephen Wise. He was the kind of rabbi, and because he was so magnetic and majestic, I use all those adjectives, that the American Jewish community, both the newcomers who spoke a lot of Yiddish, though Rabbi Wise's native language was Hungarian and German, not Yiddish, they looked on him as their leader, our leader. He was friendly with Woodrow Wilson as president, but it's his 13 meetings, and I feature this in my book, the 13 meetings with Franklin Roosevelt in the White House between 1933, when Roosevelt became president, and the president's death in 1945. And Wise had three major, we would say, agenda items. Agenda is a soft word. He had three major concerns. One was cracking the visa quota system so that Jews escaping Hitler, particularly in the 1930s, could come in increasing numbers to the United States. And he was unsuccessful. Roosevelt did not overrule his State Department through executive action. He could have, but he didn't. Second thing was that once the war started in 1939, to rescue and recover as many Jews as possible from Hitler. And that only happened late in 1944 and 45, where over 200,000 Jews were saved thanks to American efforts, but many more could have been saved. And finally, coming back to our theme here, he wanted from Franklin Roosevelt and the American administration a full-hearted, full-throated commitment to what they then called a Jewish commonwealth in the ancient land of Israel following World War II. In other words, a full commitment to Zionism. He didn't get that. And it's my belief, and this is my personal belief, that had Roosevelt been alive in May 1948, which he would have been, finishing his fourth term, I do not believe the United States would have recognized the State of Israel in 11 minutes after it declared independence, as President Truman did. Or there may not have even been a chance for the State of Israel. The American government might have pushed for a trusteeship, UN trusteeship, instead. So he failed in those efforts, and that is Stephen Wise. And he knew that Roosevelt could have done more, and yet the attitude was, particularly in the 1930s, look, it's so horrible for Jews in Europe. The only world leader who really is against Hitler and really has some power, yes, the British Prime Minister, later with Winston Churchill, was Franklin Roosevelt. And so that's the heart of the book, and that's the tragedy of his life, that late in his career, he was faced with this momentous task to save Jews and to get a commitment of America to Zionism.
In writing about Wise, you know, every hero has flaws.
Yes, indeed.
So it's important to acknowledge and understand the reality of it and also to see the accomplishment. I want to shift gears a little bit. You've been so active as an interreligious leader in the Marriage Issues Committee. Where do you see interreligious issues? What do you think the most important interreligious issues are now for the American Jewish world?
Oh, it's Islamic-Jewish relations, clearly. That doesn't mean that we stop work with the Roman Catholic community 50 years after the Second Vatican Council and the great popes, John the 23rd and John Paul II, whom I met 11 times, or Bishop, he's now, of course, Pope Francis. Nor do we stop with our work with Protestants or evangelicals or the Eastern Orthodox churches. Not at all. That has to continue. Those achievements have been revolutionary and historic, particularly since the end of World War II. But the challenge today, not the threat, but the challenge is Muslim-Jewish relations, and it has to start here in the United States. Because in the United States, we have a chance of two communities operating in a free society, pluralistic society, both minorities, Jews and Muslims, in the United States. And I would say that's the most important and most challenging, because that will determine, I think, for the next decade or two, the direction of Jewish life, Jewish interreligious relations in America. To many people, they're ready to throw up in the Jewish community, throw up their hands and quit. Well, that's the same attitude that we found back in the 1950s and 60s, where you can't really do anything with the Catholic Church or with the Christian churches in general. It turned out not to be true. My prediction is it's a different challenge, different set of relationships, different issues, but we can't stop and we can't quit. It's too vital and too important to us as Americans and to our brothers and sisters in Israel. So that's the new frontier, if you will, in interreligious relations.
I want to thank Rabbi James Rudin for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The book is called Pillar of Fire, a biography of Stephen S. Wise. You can find out more at jamesrudin.com, and you can get the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everywhere books are actually sold today. Thanks again so much, Rabbi Rudin.
My pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Daniel Gordas, author of the new book, Israel, A Concise History of a Nation Reborn. Our playout this morning comes appropriately for the concluding service for Yom Kippur, the Ne'ilah, the lovely Sephardic song, El Nora Alilah, God Exalted and Awesome, Forgive Our Sins, as sung by the Boston Camerata. My friends, Gemar Chatima Tova. May you be sealed in the Book of Life for a good year in 5777. May you have an easy fast on Yom Kippur this Tuesday night and Wednesday. And may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.